We think you've used chemical weapons, so we're warning you that we may attack, though we have no evidence to prove our allegation. That's essentially how Trump's latest threat towards Syria can be understood. Disregarding America's record on faking WMD evidence in Iraq, it still believes itself to be in a position to pass judgment on such affairs and for others to believe it. Is this a charade to justify long-term U.S. presence in Syria? And is blaming Russia for complicity going to open up a new confrontation with Moscow? Joining us for tonight's discussion is one of our guests, who is the president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Mr. Michael Lane, who is joining us live from Washington, D.C. Michael, as always, thanks for joining us here on Press TV. I don't want to use the word comical, Michael, but certainly Mattis's statement about this is comical in the sense that he admits that the United States has no evidence to prove that Syria has used chemical weapons, yet America is concerned, yet America will make a threat to get involved militarily in that regard. What do you make of that?
Well, I certainly don't have any inside information as to what evidence the United States does or does not have or will release or will not release. But I think you have to look at the facts. The Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons has confirmed that there is use of chlorine gas in the Syrian theater, that it's smaller amounts, it's been used multiple times, and you start looking at it and doing the math, and you say, okay, well, the rebels don't really have the technical capabilities or the facilities to reduce this kind of chemical weapon to a warhead like a mortar or a missile shell or something like that. And you look around and it's being used against the rebels. So, you know, simple math tells you, well, Syria is the likely culprit. But I will concede that at this point, the United States has not yet released the evidence that they have that it is Syria. And furthermore, I think that the threats, which were made on background, were relatively mild. They're raising an issue with the Syrian government that if they continue this, at some point they're going to cross a big red line and the United States will respond in kind.
All right, Michael, I'm glad you mentioned
Excuse me,
OPCW.
I don't mean chemical weapons.
Right. No, I understood. I'm glad you mentioned the OPCW, Michael, because, you know, the OPCW, Michael, originally, when that first time around, when these accusations of the first alleged chemical weapons used by the Syrian government had come about, even at that time, Russia had said, let's get these investigators onto the ground in those areas where the Americans and others said that these chemical weapons had been used, but they were denied access to those areas. Isn't that interesting? Why not let neutral investigators go into those areas where there has been this alleged chemical weapons use?
Well, absent, you know, a compelling reason that the area or the theater is too dangerous for someone to conduct that kind of forensic work, I'm a strong believer that you ought to have the international organizations in there independently confirming what has been used. And in this case, we do have the OPCW saying that chlorine gas and reports, but unconfirmed, of sarin gas in the same area.
Okay, I just wanted to check if we have our other guest with us right now. We have Martin Jay, who is joining us live from Beirut. Mm-hmm. He is an award-winning, it seems he's not ready yet, but we will, of course, have Martin with us soon. Michael, I'll continue with you for the moment. The U.S., Michael, says that Russia is complicit in this situation because it says, according to the deal that was made in 2013-2014, that Russia has not played by the rules, according to the Americans, has not pressured, quote-unquote, the Damascus or Assad government into giving up all of its chemical weapons, to the OPCW, even though the OPCW has confirmed all of those chemical weapons have, in fact, been taken out of the country. What do you make of that? The bringing in of Russia as being complicit in the situation?
Well, certainly Syria is a client state of Russia's, and they would have some influence to exert. Now, I haven't read the text of the agreement to remove the chemical weapons from Syria in a long time, and I forget whether or not Russia was to put forth best efforts or whether Russia was responsible for restraining Syria or what the story was. I suspect it was probably best efforts because nobody can guarantee 100%. Nonetheless, what we have is use of chemical weapons there. The evidence, by right now circumstantial, agreed, is that Syria is using them, and Russia ought to have more influence and more pressure to bear on President Assad to stop him from doing so. There's also some question, I think, at this point as to whether or not these are leftover, hidden chemical weapons that should have been evacuated in 2013, or whether there is some new capability that Syria has developed in terms of manufacturing new weapons. The United States has not spoken to that yet, I don't think.
Okay, Martin is joining us live. Martin Jay is an award-winning journalist who's joining us live from the Lebanese capital. Martin, thanks for joining us. What do you make of this issue, Martin, about the U.S. threatening military action, even though it says at this point it does not, in fact, have any evidence to prove that Syria has used chemical weapons?
I don't think we can take it seriously, not at this stage. I mean, I think a great deal of chest beating is going on at the moment in Washington. I think Trump has really a blank sheet of paper in the Middle East. I mean, the Trump administration is deeply confused at the moment. It's bewildered. It's lost. It doesn't really have an end game in the Middle East, and certainly not in Syria. And I think this idea that that we all need to sit up and take Washington very seriously when it dishes out this inappropriate, anachronistic moral tutelage to the rest of the world about chemical weapons, or you know, we've heard this before, not only with chemical weapons but with nuclear weapons as well. It's the same narrative, it's the same argument that perhaps held water a few years ago but is now really losing credibility on all fronts. I mean, we have to wake up to a few realities. America has lost in Syria. It's out, it's over. You know, it's the most it can do there now is play a proxy role with the Kurds. And we've seen in the last few weeks there's been certain movements about supporting border guards. Some of those individuals are probably taken from extremist groups. You know, these sort of actions that are going on. We know that also that the Kurds have got plans now are currently clashing with the Turks in a couple of provinces. Erdogan has ambitions of taking a strip along the northern border of Syria. And, you know, what can the Americans do at this precise moment except revert back to the same narrative, you know, which really shows them to have a very limited grasp of the situation. You know, it's from the very early days, it was all part of a plan to ostracize and to isolate Assad. They simplified the entire Syria equation from the very, very beginning of Mr. Assad is the main problem, so he has to be removed, and regime change is the only real answer. I don't think we can take these threats very seriously today, to answer your question. And I think we've still got a very long way to go before we can really take the Americans seriously in Syria.
Michael, I wanted to get your thoughts on that because, you know, the acting Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs and Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs a while back said, and I'm quoting him, the president has committed as a matter of strategy that we will not leave Syria. We're not going to declare victory and go. This is not my opinion. That's the president's strategic judgment, end quote. I wonder, do you think, Michael, that America really is looking for any justification to remain in Syria, to make itself relevant there, to justify that 30,000 strong border force, which came out, news came about a while back as well?
Well, certainly remaining a military presence in the region increases your influence and increases your ability to react to things. I think the United States has a number of goals. And, you know, the Kurds are certainly very, very near the top of the list, having a semi-autonomous opportunity for them in their area of the country. I think that, you know, certainly ensuring that there's not foreign troops that will encroach too close to the Israeli border is one of the objectives. And quite honestly, having a counterbalance to the presence of Iran and Russia in Syria is another of the United States' strategic interests. I don't think we're going to increase at this point the number of troops we have there, but nonetheless, the ones that are there will be working with our partners to ensure that they are as effective and efficient as they possibly can.
All right, so Martin, you know, one thing that gets left out when we talk about chemical weapons or alleged chemical weapons used by the Syrian government is the use of chemical weapons, in fact, by foreign-backed militants. And that's something that's been spoken of a number of times by the Syrian government, alleged by the Syrian government as well. And it's shown evidence to that effect as well through various medias. Why isn't that spoken about more, Martin, if the concern really is just humanitarian, if the concern really is just not using chemical weapons?
Because it doesn't fit in with the narrative that is constantly pumped out by the State Department and by the Pentagon to the journalists in Washington and London. You know, this, as I go back to my original point, that there is this obsession with removing Assad, and anything that can be used to be held against Assad is obviously exemplified, and the details, the evidence on the ground, which can actually support another idea, which possibly might show him in a different light, is conveniently brushed aside. We shouldn't forget that in 2013, when the OPCW sent people out to go ahead with this deal that was brokered and to collect all the chemical weapons, the sarin, that investigation and that deal and how it was implemented, the methodology behind it, from the very beginning, was completely skewered and completely unbalanced, and is now forming the basis of a great deal of poor judgment, in my view. At that time, we learnt that a great many opposition groups, many of the extremists, had quantities of sarin gas in one form or another. ISIS had mustard gas as well, and nothing was done about it. There was no investigation into what could be done. It just wasn't part of the agenda, and it's that sort of action which gives UN weapons inspectors and the OPCW a very bad name as being essentially a tool of the West. And I think it's very prevalent today that we still don't have that objectivity, because the opposition groups do have these quantities. Now, your guest alluded to earlier to saying that they were not very sophisticated, and perhaps opposition groups didn't have the ability to put them into mortars and such force. But we don't know that. You know, there's so much we don't know about it, because no one's actually bothered to investigate or even to delve into those areas. So, you know, you've got this extraordinary miscalculated and slanted perspective when you talk about chemical weapons. And you have this the hypocrisy, really, of the West is quite breathtaking.
Michael, what do you make of that? Why isn't there an objective look at the use of chemical weapons in Syria? If America says it's wrong for Syria to have done so, the government, that is, then why isn't it wrong for the foreign-backed militants to have done so?
Well, you know, we thought we had the chemical weapons issue solved back in 13 when all sides agreed that the Syrian government would divest itself of the weapons that it had. It was, you know, mostly apparent that it had mostly complied with that. Maybe it fully complied. Maybe it didn't. I don't know, you know, really what the answer to that is. I don't think anybody really knows what, well, the Syrians would know what the answer to that is. We don't know if the Syrians are developing a new capability with new weapons, chlorine gas in this case, and weaponizing them, putting them into mortars and missile heads and things like that. There's really a lot about this we don't know. And so therefore, I think the reason that the Trump administration held a background briefing and said, look, you know, he's got to stop this now, or he's going to face the consequences, was to really stop it in its incubation stage and not let it get out of hand. Additionally, one final thing, I think the United States is concerned that if these things are developed into small, portable weapon size containers, that they would be ripe for export, and they could wind up in any theaters and even wind up in the United States to be used against us. And President Trump would come down very forcefully if he felt that threat existed.
So, Michael, let me just stick with you. Are you saying that the OPCW should objectively also investigate militants' use of chemical weapons in Syria?
To the extent that there's evidence, I believe they should, yes. If there's a violation of a chemical weapons convention, it ought to be exposed to the sunshine, and people ought to know about it. And if there's if there's folks on the rebel side that are doing that, they ought to be held accountable. It's a violation of international law, no matter who's doing it.
Okay, so what do you make of that, Martin? Because, you know, if we're looking at this objectively again, as you said, there is a skewed view, even in the media, really, about how these things are spoken about. If chemical weapons are a danger, and of course we would all agree that they are, why doesn't America or anybody else involved in this theater in Syria approach that in such an objective fashion?
Well, because I think you mentioned media earlier, but I think media play a very big role in this, you know, and it's very difficult to work in Syria, regardless of which side of the fence you fall. And a big part of this is not setting precedents of objectivity, because if you actually brought in, and if you actually allowed the OPCW to do a thorough investigation into who owns sarin and chlorine, and let's not forget chlorine was not part of the 2013 deal. That was a mistake by the West, so you can't really start pointing the finger at Al-Assad about chlorine if he is using it at all. We don't know, you know, a lot of this is about disinformation, and we're living and working in really unprecedented times of sloppy journalism and fake news and the echo chamber, which I've seen and experienced myself so many times in newsrooms, you know, where the same narrative gets repeated and repeated. This is part of this. This is really what I think the Americans are trying to do, is just to keep on repeating this ridiculously skewered and bigoted, ill-informed narrative about chemical weapons, when in fact, if we did have an investigation, if that was rolled out, then people at home, back home in America, simple people, humble people who don't really understand what's going on here, would at least say to themselves, well, something's not right there, because if we're pointing the finger at this guy called Assad for using chemical weapons, but a UN agency of some sort has discovered the extremists have gotten as well, then that would raise really awkward questions for American journalists and American op-ed writers right across the country. And the Washington Post and the New York Times would have to acknowledge that not only have these opposition groups still got a lot of these chemical weapons, but we don't know what they're doing with them because we don't have any objectivity on the ground. The OPCW's classic stunt is to go into Idlib province like they did in 2013 and use local investigators to talk to local people. Now, that particular town that was attacked in Idlib was held by al-Nusra extremists, and you can't imagine interviewing them and expecting to get an objective answer other than, you know, Assad did this to us, which conveniently fitted exactly with what was expected by those investigators. So you have a total lack of credibility, I think, on the West side, and that needs to change if we're going to expect any sort of cooperation or any intelligent debates or exchange of information on the ground. You know, the Russians have often complained time and time that they are not given a proper hand in these investigations that go on in Syria. And you can't really expect a great deal of cooperation from the Assad government as well when everything is tipped so dramatically against them.
All right, we have about a minute and a half left. Michael, I wanted to get your final thoughts then, because, you know, this question of America's credibility is an important one, isn't it? Because, you know, we can all look back to Iraq and the fact that, you know, the media fed in live with the government at the time, the U.S. government at the time, in perpetrating and propagating those lies about Iraq having WMDs. We had Colin Powell of the United Nations showing fake, essentially, pictures about, you know, WMDs and trucks, et cetera, et cetera. That whole lie was perpetrated by the entire U.S. establishment. Why should we believe it now?
Well, it was actually the collective judgment of the entire Western establishment that Saddam had those WMDs. He may have indeed had them at some time. We don't know where they went. We know that he did have them because he used them, you know, several years prior to that. You're right. The credibility of the U.S. is important here, and that's why I think that the background briefing was just that. It wasn't people on the record by name. It wasn't making specific threats. It wasn't naming specific details. It was saying, okay, this is our evidence. This is what we'll do if it continues and if we have the evidence. I don't think that Assad has crossed the red line yet. I think he can cease and desist now. There was a meeting a couple days ago between CIA Director Pompeo and his Russian counterpart, the head of the Russian spy agency. I'm sure that in addition to influence in United States elections, the use of chemical weapons was part of that discussion.
Okay, Martin, I'll give you the last 45 seconds. Go ahead. What do you think about what Michael Joder said in defense of U.S. credibility?
Well, U.S. credibility, I think, is at stake. But I think there's another question here that we're not looking at, which is this constant, repetitive rapprochement towards Russia, as though Russia is a sort of colonial power with Syria, which is somewhat absurd and doesn't really work for the Americans in argument. I mean, Syria is a sovereign state. Assad does not take phone calls every day from the Kremlin and look for guidance about governance or what to do with various weapons or various military units that he has. So I think that is a rather preposterous argument that we should get out of. But of course, the journalists are lapping that up. They've followed that lead. And now we have cultivated in Western mainstream media newsrooms this idea that Russia is an omnipotent force in Syria, which it actually isn't. You know, it's a very influential force and a game changer. But we need to straighten those facts out before we move forward.
All right, gentlemen, we'll leave it there at that. But of course, we appreciate both your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was award-winning journalist Martin Jay, who is speaking to us live from Beirut. And we were also joined by the president of the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Mr. Michael Lane, speaking to us live from Washington, D.C. And of course, viewers, we appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.